जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपीजना वल्लभ गिरिवर्धारी, यशोदानंदन व्रज जनरंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर्धारी, यशोदानंदन व्रज जनरंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी,
जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतश्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की जय, अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांगा। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम Canto 5, Chapter 11, Text 8. Gunanuraktam vyasanaya janto Kshemaya nairgunya matho manasya यथा प्रदीपो घृतवर्तिमश्नन् शिकासधूमा भजति ह्यन्यादस्वम्। पदं तथा गुणकर्मानुबद्धम् वृत्तिर्मनश्रयते न्यत्र तत्त्वम्। गुणानुरक्तं व्यसनाय जन्तो क्षेमाय नैर्गुण्यमथो मनस्यात्। यथा प्रदीपो घृतवर्तिमश्नन् शिखा सुधूमा भजति ही अन्यदा स्वयं। पदं तथा गुणकर्माणुबद्धं वृत्तिर्मनश्रयतेऽन्यत्र तत्त्वम्। Thank you. Excuse me. Ladies, please. Guna anuraktam, being attached to material modes of nature. Vyasanaya, for the conditioning in material existence. Jantoho, the living entity. Kshemaya, for the ultimate welfare. Nairgunyam, being unaffected by the material modes of nature. Atho, thus, manaha, the mind, syat, becomes, yatha, as much as, pradipaha, a lamp, ghritavartim, a wick within clarified butter, Ashnan, burning, Shikaha, the flame, Sadhumaha, with smoke, Bhajati, enjoys, he, certainly, Anyada, otherwise. Swam, its own original. Padam, position. Tatha, so. Guna karma anubaddham, bound by the modes of material, bound by the modes of nature and the reactions of material activities. Vrittihi, various engagements. Manaha, the mind. Shrayate, takes shelter of. Anyatra, otherwise. Tattvam, its original condition. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jai. When the living entity's mind becomes absorbed in the sense gratification of the material world, it brings about his conditioned life and suffering within the material situation. However, when the mind becomes unattached to material enjoyment, it becomes the cause of liberation. When the flame in a lamp burns the wick improperly, the lamp is blackened. But when the lamp is filled with ghee and is burning properly, there is bright illumination. Similarly, when the mind is absorbed in material sense gratification, it causes suffering. And when detached from material sense gratification, it brings about the original brightness of Krishna consciousness. Purport. It is therefore concluded that the mind is the cause of material existence and liberation also. Everyone is suffering in this material world because of the mind. It is therefore proper to train the mind or to cleanse the mind from material attachment and engage it fully in the Lord's service. This is called spiritual engagement. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Mamchayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. Bhagavad Gita chapter 14, text 26. We should engage the mind fully in Krishna conscious activities. Then it will be the cause of our liberation, for our returning home back to Godhead. However, if we keep the mind engaged in material activities for sense gratification, it will cause continuous bondage and will make us remain in this material world in different bodies, suffering the consequences of our different actions. Gyananjana chalakaya chaksurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya mano bhishtam sthapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamahyam dadati svapadantikam vancha kalpataru bhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Jada Bharata is giving Maharaj Rahugana a Bhagavad Gita class. And the reason he's giving a Bhagavad Gita class is because the Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary study of spiritual life. And if the principles of Bhagavad Gita are not clear, if one is not sufficiently knowledgeable of the Bhagavad Gita's principles, then studying other literatures, while they're very nice, it doesn't help create a strong foundation. And anything you build on a weak foundation, even if it looks wonderful, it doesn't last. The Bhagavad Gita is a very important text. When Srila Prabhupada finished translating Bhagavad Gita, using Baladev Vidyabhushana's commentary, so he was asked, what would you do? He said, we'll translate the Bhagavad Gita again. I said, now we might take the translation or commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So studying the Bhagavad Gita regularly is very important. In fact, the Bhagavatam is full of the principles in the Bhagavad Gita. And if you notice carefully, in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada would refer to the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in the Bhagavatam, you'll always refer to the Bhagavad Gita. Like in this purport, Mam Chayo Vyabhicharena is taking us to the 14th chapter. In the previous verses, there were references to the Bhagavad Gita. So the Bhagavad Gita is a book of principles. And the Bhagavatam is a book of application of those principles. And Chaitanya Charitamrita is the fullness of the joyful execution of devotional service where all these principles exist. And how a person fixed in pure transcendence utilizes or lives by these principles. So studying the Bhagavad Gita is very important. Very important. So question for those of us who studied Bhagavad Gita. Where are other references of a lamp in the Bhagavad Gita? Do you know the verse? Give with more enthusiasm, please. Ajnana jam tamaha nashayami atma bhavastu jnana deepena bhasvataha. Out of causeless compassion unto the living souls or the living beings who are connected to me, I, residing as the super soul, remove the darkness arising from ignorance just as a lamp with the shining torch of knowledge, he says. Okay? Another reference of a lamp? Our Bhakti Shastra is here. Another reference of a lamp? Very good. Sixth chapter, text number 19. The reason the lamp is given is one of the lamp illuminates a dark place. And here the reference of a lamp, similarly, is that a lamp that is filled with ghee properly illuminates the surroundings very well. Versus a lamp that doesn't have sufficient ghee, all it does, it blackens the lamp. It leaves is black soot that stains. Similarly, the untrained mind, it stains the consciousness. Versus the mind, which is the only instrument Krishna has given us to help us transcend material existence. So he has given us an asset called the material mind that up to us to either use it as an asset, if not, it becomes a severe liability. The liability is that the mind perpetuates life after life. It perpetuates continuous existence within the material sphere. A cultured mind, since I've been using the phrase, a cultured mind as an asset helps relieve one of this perpetual cycle of birth and death. So it's essential that a human being, the first step or spiritual life begins with culturing of the mind. And there are different ways in which different personalities, they culture their mind. Some culture the mind through neutrality. That is, they work very hard at removing any impulses in the mind, any thought in the mind, because a thought is an impulse. So they struggle very hard. They try to keep the mind free of any desire. So neutrality. Neutrality is one option. But neutrality only avoids or brings person to a state where there are no material desires. But that's it. They can't believe, or they don't espouse the idea that the mind can have, a mind can be full of spiritual desires. It's not that the desirelessness does not mean no desire. It means full of spiritual desires or free of material desires. But that's one way, neutrality. At least it's better than giving the mind of, what we call the power of attorney or carte blanche, do whatever you like. Another way of culturing the mind is through Vedic knowledge. Now, Vedic knowledge, while it's wonderful, it does culture the mind. It cultures the mind into theoretical understanding of things. And the mind, just on the basis of theory, cannot culture itself. At best, the conclusions that it can come to is that I am part of what's called universal consciousness, or that the ultimate truth is this abstract, homogenized, it's all one sort of conclusion. The best way to culture the mind is to give it opportunities to think of Krishna. To think of Krishna, to think of Krishna's holy name, form, activities, pastimes, expanding the Hare Krishna movement, etc. These types of culturing helps the mind have its proper, here he calls it, in its original consciousness, or its original state. In the 18th chapter of, not 18th, 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes the beginning of the culturing of mind. And he uses the reference of austerity of the mind. He says that there are austerities of three categories: austerity in the mode of ignorance, austerity in the mode of passion, and austerity in the mode of goodness. And austerity itself has three features: austerity of the body, austerity of the mind, and that of the one's speech. And it's important to culture the mind by these austerities in the sphere of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, the mind becomes unsteady. Meaning, if there's not a clear roadmap for the mind, if one is just left with the idea, you should culture your mind, then it doesn't give a person sufficient direction as to what to do with the mind. So Krishna describes a little roadmap of how to culture the mind within the sphere of Krishna consciousness. So, here's charity, sacrifice. Thank you. He says, manah prasadas saumyatvam maunam atma vinigraha bhava samsuddhir hi iti etat tapo manasamuchyate. Satisfaction, simplicity, gravity, self-control, and purification of one's existence are the austerities of the mind. These are ways by which the mind is, when compared to a lamp, it is full of ghee and is burning properly. If the mind is not cultured this way, then the mind will be leaving behind severe stains. The stain is the desire for material enjoyment, the desire for sense gratification. We have been discussing how each living entity has a group of senses around the mind. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes that even if one of the senses is not controlled, then the mind immediately drives the living entity into sense gratification through that sense. Just as a boat without an anchor does not stay. So the five senses are the eyes, the nose, the tongue, the ears and skin. And each of these, for different living entities, manifest its sense gratification. So the tongue, which we understand to be the most active in terms of senses, and it is the tongue that can actually drive other senses as well. So the example of a fish is given, that a fish, because it cannot control its urge to taste a worm, it does not, or it neglects that the worm is at the end of a hook. All it takes is a line, a hook, and a worm at the end of that hook. And the fish ignores everything else and just looks at the worm. It's a little like it's a perverted reflection of Arjuna's concentration. When Dronacharya asked him, "Do you see the tree?" He said, "What tree?" He said, "Do you see the branch?" He said, "What branch?" "Do you see the bird?" "What bird?" "Do you see the eye of the bird?" "Oh yeah, sure." In a perverted sort of way, the fish says, "Do you see the line?" He said, "What line?" "Do you see the hook?" "What hook?" "Do you see the worm?" "Oh, you bet I do." And as soon as the worm is led into the water, the fish comes and tries to taste that worm. And the first thing that happens is a hook goes right through his palate and he's yanked out of water into death because he cannot control the urge. The firefly or the moth is described as a sense of the vision, and somehow it's created such that when it looks at fire, it gets so attracted that he flies right into the fire and gets burnt by the fire. He's seeing the fire, but he cannot stop himself. The ears, the example given in the Shastras is that of a deer. The hunter plays very sweet music, and the deer gets so enchanted that he just stands like that and does not move, and is a perfect target for the hunter. Because when the deer is moving, he's fast. And if the target is moving, it's difficult to shoot the target. But if the target is standing as if waiting for you, mesmerized and hypnotized by the music, he's a perfect target. The sense of smell. We describe that there are certain bees who want honey. So they go from flower to flower, and there are certain flowers that as soon as the bee goes in, the flowers close and they choke the insect to death. But what to do? Has to smell that honey, cannot stop himself. And the sense of touch is such that a giant, big, massive elephant, who's generally called a pachyderm, pachyderm is thick skin, very thick skin, full of scales, and you know, the bird sitting on the fellow, and you throw mud on him, he doesn't even care. But the same elephant with such thick skin, whom you can scratch and won't even notice, the way they train those elephants or capture them is they rub their skin against a female elephant's. And boy, is that rub attractive. He gets maddened by the rub of a she elephant and follows her. And he's led into a ditch, captured, and lives under captivity. That little rub from the female elephant is just enchanting like anything. So then each of these living entities, they follow their end or their death through that sense. And it is said that the human species is very unique. In the deer, it's the sense of sound. In the bee, it's the sense of smell. In the fish, it's the sense of taste. In the elephant, it's the sense of touch. Like that. For the human being, all these five are combined. It's the elephant here. It's the moth here. It's the deer here. It's the fish here. And the bee here. All senses are super activated. And the control tower, the motherboard, is the mind. And the mind says, yes, yes, go right ahead. It's the 21st century. Live life, king size. There's a cigarette advertisement when I was young. It's called Live Life, King Size. Just go and enjoy to whatever degree you can. Hey, you only have one opportunity. Do it well. So the mind, that's how it leaves a stain in the consciousness. And it's black, it's sticky, it's yucky, and it won't go. How much ever you scrub it. So the way to not get that stain or to remove whatever stains that exist from past conditioning is to clean the mind. And the cleansing process is through the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Cheto Darpana Marjanam. And what assists the cleansing is the culturing of the mind. Otherwise it acts against what we are doing. I chant Hare Krishna in the morning and make it nice and clean, and as soon as I keep my bead bag aside, I put more stain on it. This is Parikshit Maharaj's way of saying Manye Kunjara Shauchavat. He says that the living entity is like an elephant. He takes a nice bath for hours together, and the first thing he does is spray a lot of dirt on himself. That's what elephants do. So in one sense, we also do like that. We chant Hare Krishna on one side, and perhaps even simultaneously putting more dirt on ourselves. All the negativity that we carry with us. If not during japa time, right after, or during the day. So whatever we have worked on, next morning we start back there. Nothing's really changed. Sometimes we take 2 steps forward, nicely chant japa, clean it up, and then we take 10 steps backward. And the next morning we take 4 steps forward, thinking, wow! But in the net result is what? We still remain behind. We have not moved forward. Then we do something that takes us 10 steps backward. We chant Hare Krishna very nicely. 6 steps forward. Yay, I'm progressing. Prabhu, the net result is still regressing. And this is how it works. We let our mind take us to some really dark spaces. We make some determination. We chant Hare Krishna. We study Bhagavatam. We nice and humble that day. We think we're advancing, but we've only moved really not that much. We're still many steps behind from where we originally started. And this is how the enthusiasm progressively becomes weaker and weaker. And some people get frustrated, they get fried out, they quit. Or they throw a big tantrum. Or become super, what we call mental. Super mental means, oh, I can never go beyond this situation. Maybe Krishna consciousness is not for me, etc., etc. Why? It's for every living entity, except that we are doing something by which it's taking us in the opposite direction. So the culturing of the mind, the first thing he says is manah prasadaha, satisfaction of the mind. And Prabhupada says that the way to culture this purport is really beautiful. I'm going to read the purport. To make the mind austere is to detach it from sense gratification. Okay? How to do it? It should be so trained that it can always be thinking of doing good for others. So the detachment, the first step in detachment is when we stop being what's called self-absorbed and do something for others. When even if you have a desire to do something for others, that's the first step. Because otherwise the mind is always so focused on what can you get out of it. We call it the WIIFM program. What's in it for me program. One should not, the best training for the mind is gravity in thought. Gravity in thought is that the activity of the mind, the first place where it shows up is, how do you know what's happening in someone's mind? The first place it shows up is speech. As soon as a person speaks, you know what's happening. That's why when we sit with the spiritual master, as soon as we ask a question, he gets a full read of the mind. Because our questions are framed in such a way that, zoom, that's our little ECG, you know, or EMG, whatever it is, mind graph. Immediately he knows what's happening. And speech is the one that lets everything out. So generally in the Vedic culture, it's better to shut up and not say anything. It's described, this is a very nice principle, when in doubt, shut up. Whenever there's a doubt, should I say something or not say something? Better not to say. If there's a doubt, better not to say. Because once we say, to retrieve ourselves from what we have said is a lifetime's work. So better not to say. Culturing the mind. So gravity in thought is think before speaking. Often we speak so quickly, we didn't even think. Apparently the mind moves faster than anything else. But there is one entity, the tongue moves faster than the mind. We say things and then think later, oh, I shouldn't have said like that. Or it happens, and it's just the nature of how these senses work. Another aspect of gravity is, and that's given in the austerity of the speech, of course, is to think about, I don't want to use the word positive things, but to think in terms of Krishna consciousness. To allow the mind to consider everything from a Krishna conscious perspective, although that's not our nature as conditioned souls. As conditioned souls, our first perspectives are from the false ego side. That's the first perspective. Why did they say like that to me? Are they talking about me? Are they talking bad about me? Are they not appreciating? Whatever is the nature of things. The gravity is to start thinking in terms of Krishna consciousness. How should a devotee behave? How should I, as a practicing Vaishnava or Vaishnavi, conduct myself in this case? What would humility look like in this circumstance? If I were to take a humble position, what would it look like? These are ways of developing the gravity in thought. And as that develops, the higher nature would be, how can I serve the other person in such a way that Krishna will be pleased? And a deeper degree of gravity is, how can I contribute to the expansion of the mission of Krishna consciousness? Every circumstance can be seen in that way. That if two brothers are fighting, oh, if one of them thinks, well, how will this help or hurt the expansion of Krishna consciousness? And how can I contribute to helping the mission of Krishna consciousness? And the answer is very simple. If my strife ends here, then we all have time to focus on Krishna consciousness. But if we are fighting, there's a fighting inside the house, and we go out and tell everyone our message is about peace and happiness and universal brotherhood, come on. I mean, it's hypocritical. One should not deviate from Krishna consciousness and must always avoid sense gratification. To purify one's nature is to become Krishna conscious. Nice one. Satisfaction of the mind can be obtained only by taking the mind away from thoughts of sense enjoyment. Which means, if we allow the mind to encourage us into sense gratification, we shall be dissatisfied. And in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes that dissatisfying principle is called lust. And it burns like fire. Dushpurena analena cha. It's like adding fuel to fire. If you add more fuel, thinking, oh, it'll abate the fire, it won't work. It is lust and greed that keep the mind dissatisfied. Kama lobha dayashtraye. Cheta eteranavidam sthitam sattve prasidati. Prasida means to be satisfied or to becoming perfect. Prasidati, satisfied, happy. And to remove for happiness to come in, for satisfaction to come in. Kama lobha adaya. Lust and greed, etc. Lust, greed, etc. Lust is what burns it, and greed is what keeps it burning. And these two make the mind very dissatisfied. So first step in satisfaction is to accept what Krishna is giving us. Whatever he's giving us, to first accept it. Okay, Krishna, you've put me in this circumstance. Now let me think of how I can serve you in this situation. This is called satisfaction. The more we think of sense enjoyment, the more the mind becomes dissatisfied. In the present age, we unnecessarily engage the mind in so many different ways for sense gratification, and so there is no possibility of the mind's becoming satisfied. The best course is to divert the mind to the Vedic literature, which is full of satisfying stories, as in the Puranas and the Mahabharata. Take the mind, Krishna is telling us, or Prabhupada is telling us, take the mind to those satisfying stories of the activities of Krishna and his devotees. It's very satisfying. If it's not satisfying, then we still take the mind there, because that's how the mind gets cultured. You can't say, I read it, it's not satisfying. Culturing it again and again in the association of devotees. One can take advantage of this knowledge and thus become purified. The mind should be devoid of duplicity, and no one should think, and one should think of the welfare of all. Duplicity is something here, something else here. We say and do things that we don't mean, or for a person who is duplicitous. Now at the same time, we should not necessarily say all the things that we mean or do the things that we mean. What we have to correct is what is it that we mean actually? Are the what we mean, that should be corrected. It's very important. And if something is there, then it should be expressed. But it should be expressed through the medium of Krishna consciousness. Suppose we are upset with someone, which is quite possible, or something is bothering us, then it should be expressed. but through the medium of Krishna consciousness. That is, the non-medium, what is not Krishna consciousness, is to point the finger. You did this, it's your fault. And the medium of Krishna consciousness begins with, I am getting disturbed, and this is bothering me. And this is something that is a problem for me. Because if we go out and try to fix the world, we'll be very busy for many lifetimes. And the world is already fixed. There's nothing for us to fix. Bhaktisiddhanta said, there is nothing for it to be fixed. It's already there. Everything is working according to Krishna's plan. All you have to fix is your perspective of things. Trying very hard to fix others is a completely futile proposition. It just doesn't work. We become frustrated trying to fix others. So what we fix is our perspective of things. But sharing has value. I'm feeling like this. This is bothering me. So I'm expressing it to you. That's very valid. And one should think of the welfare of all. Now this is very difficult. Because one is, we don't know all. Who all means? Do we know all the 6 billion human beings? No. Do we know all the people in Chicago? No. Do we know the people in Rogers Park? No. Do we know people on Lunt Avenue? No. Do we know the people in 1716? No. We don't know them. Really, we don't know them. I know the faces, but we don't know them. But to think of the welfare of all, that's fantastic. That's where the mind needs to go to. So the starting point of thinking about the welfare of all begins with thinking about my genuine welfare. Because if I am in the proper consciousness, whoever I meet will benefit. Whoever I meet. And for me, that is all. Because I can't meet all 6 billion people. What to speak of other living entities. So my thinking of welfare of others is that I carry proper consciousness, such that whatever interactions others may have with me is in some way beneficial to them. Silence, here he's saying, satisfaction, simplicity, gravity, self-control, and purification of one's existence. Prabhupada says, silence means that one is always thinking of self-realization. Any other thought is considered noise. And that noise disturbs. It's a nuisance. So when the mind is thinking about Krishna consciousness, it is considered to be silent. It's in perfect harmony. That's what's actually happening. It's in perfect harmony with the nature of the soul. So therefore it is considered silence. But the mind is active. But it's in harmony. When there is disharmony, that the mind is thinking something other than what's nature of the soul, then there is noise. And that noise is irritating. For some persons it's a loud bang, for some persons it's a thump, for some it's a shrill. Whatever it is, it's the variety of things that the mind comes up with. But they're all noises. And they're nuisance value. Control of the mind means detaching the mind from sense enjoyment. One should be straightforward in his dealings and thereby purify his existence. Purification of existence means straightforward in dealings. Straightforwardness does not mean rudeness and being obnoxious. Straightforward means honest. What's here comes here by the medium of Krishna consciousness. And this is how one is purified. Let's look at the opposite. When one is not straightforward, or when one is crooked, the mind becomes more colored or agitated. Crookedness of the mind is an indicator that the false ego is very active. False ego is very active, means a person takes a simple situation and complicates the whole thing in their mind. The complication is, what complicates the mind is doubts, suspicion, not giving another person what we call benefit of doubt, or judging the person as that person is wrong before even anything else I've already come to. You know, even the judicial system works under the principle or premise that a person is innocent until proven guilty. But in the courtroom of our mind, every person is guilty until proven innocent. The onus of innocence we place on another person. Prove yourself to be innocent, because in my mind I've already judged you to be guilty. So now it's your problem. Prove it to me. This is not the nature of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava considers the person innocent to extreme degrees. Even if someone says is guilty, well, let me first make sure. If you want a pastime to really hone it down, is Arjuna. When Ashwatthama has killed brutally the sons of Draupadi, Arjuna promises Draupadi, I will bring this person's head separated from his body, and you can stand on that head and offer oblations to your dead sons. I make this vow. And Arjuna was very serious about his vows. So Krishna told him, that is Ashwatthama who did this. He said, let's go. So they chased him. And Ashwatthama was fleeing for his life, and Krishna and Arjuna were in hot pursuit. Finally, Ashwatthama's horses became very tired. They were thirsty and they couldn't move faster than this. And very swiftly, Krishna and Arjuna caught up. And they arrested Ashwatthama, tied him up like a petty animal, and grabbed him by his hair and brought him in front of Draupadi and said, this is the person who has offended you like this. I'm ready to punish him. Draws a sword. Looks at Krishna. And Krishna says, you would not be killing a Brahmana. Because he's a son of a Brahmana, you have to be careful. You cannot kill a Brahmana. You know, we sing Yani Kani Cha Papani, Brahma Hatyadi Kani Cha. That when we circumambulate Tulsi, even the greatest of sins, like killing a Brahmana, we are absolved of. So Arjuna said, oh, I can't kill a Brahmana. Krishna said, well, he's not acted like a Brahmana. So he has fallen from his Brahminical position. So you would not be killing a Brahmana if you killed him. Krishna didn't say do it. Krishna did not say don't do it. Krishna is very tricky. Then Draupadi said, Muchatam, Muchatam. Please release him, release him. Don't kill him. Because just as a mother, I am a mother and I am suffering the loss of my son, his mother will suffer the same way. Bhima came in, said, kill him. It is the right thing to do. He is a perpetrator of some very severe sinful activity. Kill him. It's an order from an older brother. Yudhishthira Maharaj came in and said, forgiveness is a quality of a Vaishnava. You should let him go. Oh, so many conflicting instructions. What to do? And Arjuna thought about it, and cut off the chudamani, the jewel on the hair that was bestowed upon Ashwatthama, insulted him, which is worse than death, and let him go. And later the verses say that Krishna was actually testing Arjuna. And Arjuna passed the test. So therefore we can also see that in our life, we can consider it that way, that whatever circumstances we are put in, Krishna is testing us. Hey, are you applying the principles that you've been learning from me in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam? It's a pop quiz. Every situation is a pop quiz. That for us to, here's an opportunity to apply these principles, humility, tolerance, etc. It's a great opportunity. Krishna is giving us every day. That is why he puts us with the Vaishnavas. If he put us somewhere else, we'd fail miserably. Because the Vaishnavas, on the other hand, are interacting with us. This is called Bodhayantascha Parasparam. It's very important that we practice these qualities. And the thing is, even if we make a mistake, which by the way we will, because it's in the environment of Vaishnavas, we are in an environment of non-judgment and forgiveness. We should be. I can't say we are in, we should be. That is what ideal Vaishnava situations mean. That even if we make mistakes, we offend the Vaishnavas, they will say, it's all right. Come on, it's fine, no problem. You can't do it outside. Because it's not Bodhayanta Parasparam. So this is how we culture the mind. And he says, all these qualities together constitute austerity in mental activities. And when the mind is austere, it becomes pure. When mind is not austere, it leaves a black stain on the mind. Any questions or comments? A few minutes. Ashraya Prabhu?
So it's, Hare Krishna, thank you for your class. This is from a couple of days ago, but it also connects to what you were discussing today. Trying to understand another person.
Yeah.
That theme. It's a nice mood, I guess, or it's nicer at least than judging or just taking a decision without considering the other side. My personal experience and observation is that, especially in our current times, that it ends up being more speculation than actually understanding anything about the person. And I was wondering, you know, it seems more like just a desire to serve them is more healthy thing for somebody. At least, you know, you have more capacity maybe, but, you know, some of us maybe can't really understand anybody, forget about who it is, because things are so convoluted. It's like you really can't understand where things are coming from. So somehow Krishna has to reveal that, you know, and because trying to understand it through, like, even the light of Bhagavad Gita, like you're pointing out things like this, if we understand the philosophy and stuff, it still becomes like an imposition in my experience. We're like intellectual people or something, and we understand all these principles and modes of nature and blah, 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 and then we're like, I'm trying to understand this person with my intellectual capacity, and it still becomes like a judgment, although it's coded in this nice so-called scriptural vision, yeah, or something. So maybe if you'd be kind enough to speak, sure, a little bit more on that.
Sure, sure. Nice question. Understanding is not just in an environment with a unit of one, meaning I'm sitting somewhere and I'm trying to understand someone. The best way to understand someone is to ask. To have a dialogue. To say that I want to serve the other person, that's very nice. That falls into the category of good intentions. Fantastic intention. I want to serve them. Combined with the good intention must be to know how to serve them. I may really want to serve them in this way, but that may not be sufficient. It may actually not serve the person because it's only good intentions. And we've heard, right, from Maharaj, good intentions are not good enough. So understanding doesn't have to mean it's some intellectual process. It means dialogue. This Bodhayanta Parasparam, Bodhayanta specifically means to use intelligence, Prabhupada says, to preach to each other. But it's to understand each other. That's what he means. So, you know, in this situation, something, it seemed like that. Can you please express what was going on? It's just so that is my, you know, I'll tell you one thing. I was giving a Sunday feast class. And one of the persons in the audience, the whole Sunday feast lecture was fidgeting, just couldn't sit. I don't think it was could not sit, it was just fidgeting. And the face was, you know, contorted like this. The eyes went away there like that. Every time I would say something. And to me, while I'm speaking, as I made eye contact with that person, I was like, boy, I'm saying something really wrong here. Or I'm really off the mark. Something's not right. And so that was, because just by that, I guess, body language, you know, I was coming to that understanding. And so I left it, because, you know, Sunday means variety here. But 20 minutes later, after class was over and all that, the person walks up to me and says, fantastic class. It really helped me so much. And I was like, whoa, I had a whole different reading of the thing, you know. So I said, I told the person, thank you very much for expressing it, because I was going in a whole different direction with just the body language. So asking would be very helpful. I see this, what does it mean? Please help me, because maybe I don't understand it properly. So the dialogue is very, very, very helpful. Always dialogue is very helpful. Now, the understanding does not also mean that we have to know every minutia complexity of the person's life. It doesn't have to be that. It is just that if we can appreciate that they have a different perspective of things than I do, even that is okay. Just okay, they're thinking differently about this. All right. It's as simple as that. Versus everyone should think like I think. Or other harmful is I should also think like they're thinking. That is also not necessary. Oh, you're thinking that way. And the reasons you're thinking that way is the X, Y, and Z. Okay. I can see why you're thinking like that. And here's why I'm thinking like that. And two people can be very good friends with each other and disagree. And that's okay. That's totally okay. Disagreement is all right. Like that. Okay, 8:30. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Karunanidhi Prabhu, welcome back. You have Mahaprasadam for all of us? Okay. Hare Krishna.